Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. We got more people showing up. It's fantastic. Very hot topic. All right, well, I'm going to start to make some introductions here. We're just at the top of the hour. Okay, we're hitting it right now. So I'm going to jump in. I know more will probably show up. They can join us, but I want to thank everybody for being here. My name is Paul Hitchcock. And I am a colleague of Harry Barth, who is the founder and senior managing partner of Barth Calderone, an asset protection, estate planning, and business planning firm located in Orange County, California, with about 6,000 clients across the country. Harry is a top speaker across the country. We do about 40 workshops a year to many incredible organizations, including Vistage. I'm going to get to you, Cynthia, here in a moment, and Tiger 21, the Women Presidents Organization, and many others. So Harry's in very high demand, and very, very glad to have him here. This is a really important topic, the Corporate Transparency Act, how to understand it and what it's all about. And we're going to give you an opportunity to get one-on-one with us. I'll put it up in the chat. If you have questions as a follow-up, we're going to take Q&A at the end. Please add your questions in there. Cynthia, I hope you can monitor the Q&A and get those in front of Harry as they come in. But and we'll also get the recording out. But if you want to get one-on-one with us, you have questions afterwards, happy to do it. Complimentary. Get one-on-one with Harry and the team about your own situation. As you hear from Harry on how this just isn't a basic new law that can be easily ignored, it's a big deal. You'll find that out. Excited to have Cynthia here. She's an incredible Vistage chair in Iowa, doing some amazing things. And Cynthia, Harry, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. Hi, everyone. I'm Cynthia Gorrell, a Vistage chair here in Northeast Iowa. And we have a really robust Vistage community and serve over 100 community leaders here and touch over thousands of employee lives. So this community is the I-380 corridor and the Cedar Valley in about a 50-mile radius. And I want to thank Paul for organizing this, and thank you, Harry, for being here today and to speak on this very important issue of this new Corporate Transparency Act. And I'm really excited to learn more and to share all this with you. Thank you.
Yeah, and this is great. And so, Cynthia, part of this is you've really coordinated here with Harry for this this content. We want to get into it. So, Harry, go ahead and take it away. Let's jump in.
Okay. Well, everybody, it's good to be here. And this act is now a grand total of 25 days old. So it's a baby, but it's a monster at the same time. So what was that one in the cradle? Whose baby was that? That was
Rosemary's.
Rosemary's.
Oh, gosh.
So this is Rosemary's baby in disguise. What is the Corporate Transparency Act? So the corporate, I think we need to understand it, because if we don't understand the reason behind it, all of the details that I give you for the rest of our time together is not going to make as much sense as it should. So what it is, it's primarily a registry for law enforcement purposes only. It's not a public registry. It's for governmental use, both domestic and international. And it's designed to help prevent financing of terrorism. It's designed to help prevent money laundering, tax evasion, and other nefarious activities that are done behind shell and or front companies. It's basically been emerging since 9/11 with the Patriot Act, Know Your Client rules, and Sarbanes-Oxley. It's been emerging along the way. And there are some challenges to it, too. So let's talk about that. So there are a challenge. The National Small Business Association has a court case in federal court challenging the constitutionality of the Corporate Transparency Act. We'll talk about that through the analysis that we're going to do together. But inherently, the challenge, I don't think, is going to make it. Parts of the Corporate Transparency Act may be declared unconstitutional, but I would say, in essence, most of it, Cynthia, is going to be here to stay. Why? In modern Western economies in Europe, this is already in effect. So this is not unusual. We're a little late attending the party. Because this is a common problem throughout Western economic society. And two, the know your client rules have been in effect. You've got to get a bank loan. They'll want to know everything about you. They want your driver's license. They want to know who you are. So we have that. And even to a notary, you got to put down your address and your driver's license, perhaps a fingerprint to get things done. So this is not new. So I would think that the vast majority of it will stick. What's scary about it is that along with this act comes, for failure to comply, they're serious, comes civil and criminal penalties. So if you don't comply willfully, they can put you in jail up to 2 years. It's a felony. They can also fine you $500 a day up to $10,000-$15,000. And plus civil fines and other fines and penalties, which are even yet to be developed under the act for people who don't comply or obstruct compliance. So they're serious about this. So I think that's important to understand. It's at the end of the day, what are we looking for? Who are the people behind the layers and the veil? Think about that. We need to drill down and find out who owns the company. Now, who does it apply to? Well, it applies to every single business in the United States of America that is a limited liability company, a corporation, a limited partnership, a limited liability partnership. If we have to go to the state and give birth to a company, a legal entity, it is subject to the Corporate Transparency Act unless it fits into one of the exemptions. So we have from January 1st, 2024, now catch this, till December 31st, 2024, to register or build into this registry with the government 33 million existing entities. And of course, we have the applicability to every new entity that's being born after January 1st, 2024. So just that's nuts. Now, let's talk a little bit about a change that has taken place, even in early December. So in early December, and this is all brought about by, you'll hear the term FinCEN. What is FinCEN? The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is a subsidiary or part of the United States Department of the Treasury. So it's the Financial Crimes Network that is building this database of compliance for governmental and law enforcement utilization. And when the law was adopted, it was passed in 2020. They delayed it in 2021, they delayed it in 2022, they delayed it in 2023, but Launchpad, January 1st, 2024, it's in existence. And so when we look at this act that's in existence, just a couple of deadlines. If we form a new, and we're going to talk about new companies first, then we'll talk about the older companies, because like one has to do with the other. We form a new company. So if I am an attorney and forming a new company, and we do a lot of them, we do asset protection, estate planning, business transactions, all across the country, to a lot of entities. And we have, from the date that Iowa, for example, says you are an effective entity in the state of Iowa, we have 90 days from that point to bring that entity into compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. It used to be 30. FinCEN couldn't handle it, so they extended it to 90. And for all the others, we have 1 year. There is a bill that's pending in Congress right now that was passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate, and not yet signed by Joe, that will extend for existing companies from December 31st, 24, to December 31st, 25, giving us an extra year to bring them into compliance. Okay. So now we have the lay of the land. Pretty much, if you have an entity, an LLC, an LP, a corporation, LLP, it's subject to compliance. So let's talk about, which is very important, who's exempt from this act. All right. So let me go through with you the exemptions that are available. And one of them is very important for Vistage members and many CEOs. So if you are a public company, NASDAQ, you know, if you're an American Stock Exchange, New York Stock Exchange, public company, you're exempt from compliance with the CTA. Remember what they're looking for. They're looking for people hiding behind entities engaging in nefarious activities. Public companies have a lot of disclosures and they are fully investigated before they're allowed to go public. SEC registered investment advisors are exempt. Again, because the SEC has investigated them. Venture capital fund advisors are exempt. Insurance companies are exempt, big in Iowa. And insurance producers are exempt because they're all regulated by the state. We know who they are. They have a license number. They have background checks, whatever it may be. Certain regulated financial companies, banks, credit unions, and registered securities broker-dealers, they're exempt. There's FINRA's all over them, and all the other regulatory agencies are all over them, so they don't worry about them. Trusts, companies that are regulated are exempt, but trusts themselves are exempt. Notice I didn't say trust. I said LLCs, limited partnerships, corporations, you know, LLPs, but I didn't say trusts. But trusts are highly implicated, and I'll show you how that happens along the way. Public accounting firms, CPA firms that are registered with Sarbanes-Oxley are exempt. Tax-exempt entities, nonprofit organizations, political organizations are exempt. Governmental authorities are exempt. And subsidiaries, Cynthia, of an exempt company are exempt. So we have a parent company that's exempt. The subsidiaries that are owned by that parent are exempt. And the big one that affects most people is what they call the large company exemption. And these are ands, not ors. So if we have 20 full-time employees, as defined by state law, and we have our main office in the United States of America, and we have $5 million of gross sales or more, we are exempt from CTA. I'll repeat it. 20 full-time employees, office in the United States, and $5 million of gross sales.
But Harry, you're going to talk about how those companies are not exempt if they've got brother-sister stuff going.
Yeah, of course. But those are exempt entities. It's kind of strange. What happens if we have 20 employees in 2024 and in 2025, I have 18 employees? Well, we're not exempt anymore and we need to file under the act. Changes must be filed with FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, within 30 days of the date of the change. One of the movements in Congress is to extend that to 90 days, but right now the law is 30 days.
Okay. Harry,
yeah.
We have a lot of ESOP companies in Iowa. Tell us about ESOPs.
Well, they're not actually ESOP companies. They're companies that are owned by an employee stock ownership plan. And so the company itself, if it has 20 or more employees, it's most ESOP companies too, and have over $5 million gross sales, is exempt from reporting. If the ESOP company is below those thresholds and not exempt under one of the other exemptions, the fact that it's owned by an ESOP, which is actually a trust, okay, is a reporting company. And I'm going to explain when we see about reporting, who has to report, you'll see just how the ESOP fits in there along the way, because the definition under the act of what they call a beneficial owner is really nondescript. Just bad grammar, bad English along the way. So, we had a question about companies that are exempt and non-exempt in California. California, Iowa, is irrelevant. It's federal law. So it's the United States of America. So it doesn't go by state. So let's get that. So first thing, so we decide that we're going to form a company. We got Harry, Paul, and Cynthia decide to form an LLC in Iowa, right? And so if it's not an exempt company, we don't fit any of the categories. We, from the date that Iowa gives birth to that company, this now becomes a reporting company. So the company is a reporting company. The responsibility for compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act is with the company. So our company is a reporting company. So first of all, what do we have to report about our company? Well, we have to report its name, you know, Harry Paul Cynthia Co. LLC. We need to report any DBAs that we're doing, Widgets Are Us, you know, Widgets Are You. All of the DBAs need to be reported. We need to also put our address, where we're located, not the lawyer's office that did it, not the accountant's office, you know, not a UPS address, not, you know, a post office box. The physical address of the company must be reported. And its unique identifying number, usually it's our EIN number, so that we've gotten from the feds, needs to be reported. So all of that information has to be uploaded for the company. If it's a disregarded entity, for example, a single member LLC that is tax disregarded. So in a disregarded entity, usually there may not be an EIN number. You need to report your social security number. There must be an identifying number. If there's no identifying number, it can't come into compliance. There are no exceptions to compliance. It's interesting. Matter of fact, if it's not complete, they cannot accept it at FinCEN by law, and penalties will ultimately apply. But that's the beginning. So that's the company. So we've got Harry, Paul, Cynthia Co. The company is now registered.
Harry?
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot of the Vistage member companies are larger than 20, and they're in the U.S., and they're over 5 million.
Yep. They don't.
And a lot of the Vistage members that I work with, CEOs, key executives, advancing leaders, etc., they and their husband on the side, or spouse on the side, or friend may have a car wash company, yeah, or they may be building apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. And if they decide to do an LLC or anything like that, then this would definitely speak to them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We're going to get into, those are not subsidiaries of the mothership. Those are, you know, like myself, I have a law firm I own. Yeah. I own a law firm. I have well over 20 employees, well over $5 million. I'm in the United States of America. My law firm doesn't have to comply. But I myself have 9 other companies, all of which have to comply. You know, real estate LLCs, stock sponsored cash LLCs, asset protection LLCs, estate planning LLCs, limited partnerships LLCs, they all have to comply.
Yeah.
So you're 100%, I'm going to get into that. But I'm just kind of building so we don't lose everybody along the way, so they understand what has to happen. All we've done so far for a new company that you and I formed after January 1st is saying that company needs to comply, and the company just complied with FinCEN for the company information. Now, for new companies formed after January 1st, 24, we have something which is called the company applicant. The company applicant is the paralegal in my office, for example, that filed your paperwork with the state of Iowa. She must comply. So she says that, you know, Mrs. Smith filed that paperwork, and here is either her address and passport and ID, and I'm going to talk about what has to happen in a minute. She has to comply. I am the attorney that recommended that we form an LLC. I have to comply. In addition, anyone who owns 25% or more of our company, which would be all three of us at 33 and a third each, we have to comply. The people that are in control of our company, the manager of our LLC, must comply. If the manager of our LLC is a corporation, the president must comply, the CFO must comply, the COO, the CEO, and the board of directors must comply if they have the ability to terminate a CFO. And Harry, I haven't Harry, even Harry, gotten to the trust yet. Yeah.
Quick question. So if I have an LLC, a law firm set it up, a paralegal set it up, everyone's got a report. Mm-hmm. Who would get the fine? Who's the onus on to make sure everybody's reporting? Because what if the paralegal's gone? The law firm's out of business.
Well, no, that doesn't matter. The paralegal couldn't be gone at the time that they formed it. Okay.
So you would still put down. Yeah. Forward.
So this, looking backwards for the existing companies, which I haven't gotten to yet, the company applicant is not a requirement. Who knows who the paralegals were or who the attorneys were? Nobody knows. And at this point, it seems that nobody cares. All right. But now, comply. So now, what do we got to do, Harry, Paul, and Cynthia? We got to comply. So what information do we have to now give to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network to be in compliance? Well, Cynthia, you'll have to give your full legal name. All right. You will have to give your physical address, same thing, where you live, not UPS, not my office, not the accountant's office, where you live, which is really thrilling because we don't necessarily want everyone to know where we live, and a color copy, a PDF of your passport or your driver's license must be uploaded to FinCEN for every one of those beneficial owners that own more than 25%, the controlling entities, and all of the control of the controlling entities. Wow. In some cases, that could be 20 or 30 reporting individuals. And we're looking for the humans that are behind the veil. So, Cynthia and Harry, I have 9 other companies. So what do I do? So there's an option. So one option, which I think everyone should avail themselves of, is to get what is known as a FinCEN identifying number. I strongly suggest this for everybody. So you go onto the FinCEN, and Paul will post the link later, website. We would normally get this on behalf of our clients or behalf of clients that we're bringing into compliance under the CTA. To get the number, and then it's one of those, you know, have 2-factor and 3-factor authentication, you know, where'd you go to high school, you know, what's your favorite pet, you know, all this stuff goes back and forth with your cell phone. So once you get on there to apply for a number, you put that same information that I just told, upload it, and you'll get a number, Cynthia DeGoro, and here's your number. So now in the future, whenever Cynthia is involved with CTA, instead of putting all that information down again and sending your driver's license again, just put down your identifying number. It's like a social security number. I got one in about 30 some odd minutes when I went on and navigated the Byzantine government website, but eventually got my number. So, because I need that, because every time that in my law firm that I recommend an entity, I'm one of the reporting people no matter what. So it's always Harry Barth, number, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So we got that. And we have, like I said, within 90 days to report all of that information. But sometimes it gets a little challenging because, let me give you an example. We did a seminar recently for numerous number of business chairs in Texas. In Texas, everyone in the oil and gas business in Texas. And so he says, you know, they do in Texas, they drill an oil well. That oil well is usually an LLC. That's a reporting company. Usually, all the people, 4 guys or gals, got together, invested in that oil well. Each one of them is an LLC. So LLC, or 4 reporting LLCs, the oil well itself, LLC is a reporting entity. All the controlling people, all the management people need to report on that. I mean, you're talking about sometimes 30, 40, but now it gets worse. Remember I said that trusts are not reporting entities. Trusts, as we know, we do thousands of them, quite complex documents with many people doing many things. And so now Cynthia says to me, all right, I want to take my 1/3 interest that I have in Harry Paul Cynthia Co. LLC, and I want to put it in my living revocable trust with my spouse. because we don't want it to go to probate. We have to think for the kids, all the stuff that everybody puts their stuff in the trust. Now, we're not even talking about a complicated asset protection trust. We're not talking about intentionally defective grantor trust. We're talking about the simple living revocable trust that most people have to avoid probate and put a game plan together for the children. So now your third is owned by your trust. So the trust, not the trust itself, but the trust now is greater than a 25% beneficial owner of your one third. So now we have to report who the trustees of the trust are, who the trust protectors are who could change the trustees, who the beneficiaries of the trust are. We look through the trust, who created the trust, if they have the ability to move assets in and out, all of them become reporting entities. So if you look at the magnification that's going on at this point, so in order to examine what has to happen, we have to look at ownership, we have to look at control, we have to look through other forms of entities to be in compliance. The good part about it is that it's one and done. Once we bring that entity properly registered with all of its components, which, by the way, just as an aside, as this is not a plug in any way, shape, or form, should be done by a law firm. Why? One, you want to gain attorney-client privileges because mistakes could be criminal penalties, especially if we get into an argument whether it was willful or non-compliance. And the other thing, too, in looking at that, is that there's just way too many things to, for example, the AICPA, that's the organization that deals with the CPAs, has said to its members, don't go near the CTA because that would be considered the unauthorized practice of law. It'll just leave it to the lawyers, financial advisors, CPAs, let the lawyers do it because it's the ownership, it's control. These are legal issues and questions, not just ministerial things. There's two parts. Part one is all this, who has to comply, when they have to comply, then all of the different components that are involved. And then simply after that's all determined and figured out, then you file it. Okay, then there's like a filing service that'll file it, you know, with the government. Or you could sit there yourself and spend 2.5 hours putting all these 50 people, and it's easier to hire a filing service and let them file it for you. But that's critically important. Something also to know that if we have a minor, like a kid that owns a percentage of a company or a trust for a kid that owns a percentage, minors don't have to file, but the parents do, or the guardians do, on behalf of the minor. When the minor reaches age 18, then the minor has to file. It's a change. Somebody owns a company, dies. That's a change. So when it completes the probate process or the trust administration process, and that one-third interest, Paul's one-third interest, vests in his beneficiary, those beneficiaries now need to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. It is just, it's enormous. And, you know, just to wax with an opinion for a second, I'm not so sure. You know, one of the components of declaring something unconstitutional is the benefit and the burden. This puts a tremendous burden on every business in America, every small business. Not targeted for big businesses, as you can see. It's targeted for the two-person or three-person LLC that owns a piece of real estate or has an equipment that leases to the company. You know, all the things that you just talked about. So that's who it's targeted for. And so we now have a benefit, burden, time, and cost associated with trying to comply with this Byzantine Act. And there's criminal penalties associated with it. And the question at the end of the day is, will this really do anything? You put all 33 million companies through this. Will this keep the terrorists and the money launderers and those others using? Oh, what? They'll just find another way around it. But we're going to be left with the burden. It's just typical governmental legislation, but it's bipartisan legislation as well. So looks like it is here to stay. So go ahead. You have questions, Cynthia? You're muted, Cynthia.
So, Harry, remind us again, what U.S. department is this all under?
United States Department of Treasury, and it's called the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And Paul put up in the chat the mm-hmm. FinCEN website to be able to get a FinCEN identifying number.
Yeah, and Harry, you've gone through all the process, so so that you can get the number, and it's
Yeah, and so it's actually some scenarios are pretty simple. So mm-hmm. if you just have a living revocable trust, you got a brokerage account in your house in it, there's no compliance. You have a living revocable trust, you have an LLC in it that holds a small consulting business, needs to comply. And
all the Vistage chairs are going to need to comply.
Every single one of them, you bet. And if they hold their interest in their trust, which most do, then the trust mm-hmm. has to come in and comply. And it's funny, a lot of us think of it in terms of LLCs and limited partnerships. You can have 99% owned by limited partners and 1% owned by the general partner. The general partner is in control. That could be an individual, could be a corporation. It's a corporation who controls the corporation. So remember, it's not, if it says XYZ Corp, who controls XYZ Corp? Who are the human beings behind all of this? So if we can't get down to who the human beings are, we're not going to be in compliance. That's the whole spirit of the law. It's like, well, it's held by my trust. Okay, well, who are the human beings behind the trust? All right, this corporation, which is held by another corporation, which is held by a holding company. Okay, every layer needs compliance till I get up to the holding company. And then who are the human beings behind the holding company? So this is becomes this analysis of what has to, exempt, not exempt, if not exempt, ownership, control, company applicants that are involved. Some other things that are involved too is that, and some opportunities. So one, I think it's important that shareholders agreements, operating agreements for existing entities, and definitely for new entities, we're going to talk about existing entities in a moment, need to be modified and changed. All right. Why? Because we need to put a provision, for example, in the LLC operating agreement that now calls Corporate Transparency Act, where the members agree to comply with the act. In other words, if you're going to be a member of Harry, Paul, and Cynthia Co., you're signing that you will give the information required so our organization could be in compliance. If you will not give that information, you cannot be a member. We will throw you out of the company because you will not only be subject to penalties and fines, the company will be subject to penalties and fines. We control the company. We could be subject to penalties and fines and even imprisonment. So it's serious business, Cynthia, with what's going on here with the Corporate Transparency Act. It's not difficult to comply, but we need to comply. So modification. Now, once you're modifying shareholders' agreements, operating agreements, things of that nature, I think the opportunity is for everybody to take a look at those documents. Many of those documents were put together at the inception of a company when it was formed and never looked at again. It's a great time to see. You'll find out that there are members on the LLC that aren't there anymore, that they never changed the operating documents. We'll also find that many of your members and many of the people that I work with, and even myself, we have some companies that we really don't use. They're just sitting around. We made them. They say, I keep it. I did it, 5 years ago. Really doesn't do anything. I see that when I look at clients all day long. They held two or three companies that they just maintain. Well, all of those companies need to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. Now, if they dissolve them before compliance is due, which as it stands right now is December 31st, 2024, they do not need to comply. And also that 20 employees, 5 million gross sales is at the time of filing. What is it at the time of filing? But any changes. So, Cynthia, you decide to leave Iowa and move to Indiana, right? In a remote world, people are all over the place today. And so when you do, you have a, let's say you listen to me, you got a FinCEN number, your address has changed, your driver's license has changed. You have 30 days from the time you land in Indiana to update your FinCEN information. Your number will remain the same, but your information has to be updated. If you don't update it, right? But we also need to have somewhere along the line that any company that you become affiliated with, you've agreed to give that information and keep it in compliance, so the company itself doesn't go out of compliance, because the responsibility for reporting is with the company at the company level. So that's a new company. We formed it. Look what we just went through to make our LLC. So, but really what did it do? It may probably added a couple of bucks to the cost of forming, because you did a legal analysis. If I form a company, I sure as heck know who the owners are. I know who the company applicants are. I know if they're minors. I know what, you know, and they also know if they're in a, are we putting them in a trust? So we know the trust. So we know, we kind of could list all of the compliance that has to take place, then dump it off on the filing service, let them file it with FinCEN, and we're done. So not really egregious, but needs to be looked at and done. And also nothing that you should wait until the end of the year. So for new companies, 90 days. Now changes, 30 days. Existing companies, like my nine. I looked at it, I got nine companies that I need to go through this analysis for. And I have until December 31st, 2024, unless they turn around and change the rules. And I have to, I'm in California, community property state, so my wife and myself are reporting. Our trusts are reporting, and I have some advanced, sophisticated trusts are reporting. All the, if you take just a simple corporation, a lot of your members may be simple S corporations, right? There's six or seven, two, three, four people, you know, and some of the S corporations that are formed, although I don't think that the greatest thing for asset protection, they may hold the equipment that they're leasing to the company. So when you get to a corporation, you have the owners. First, the corporation needs to file. The owners that own more than 25% need to file. So you say, hey, what if I have 10 owners at 10% apiece? Well, those owners, not one of them has to file. But who controls the company? So the president, CEO, COO, CFO, anyone that's in a position to control the destiny or aspects of the destiny of that company, all of them need to file. All right. And those that need to file, if they have ownership interest, that needs, it's in their trust needs to file.
Harry, so, there's a question to me. Cynthia, do you want to address that question real quick?
Yes. It says, could you repeat the citation to whichever case or group was challenging the constitutionality of the CTA?
It was the National Small Business Association of America, and it's in the district court in Alabama. I don't know if I have the specific citation, but that's National Small Business Association.
I would imagine
they brought that case a year ago. It's meandering its way through the courts. But again, you know, I'm not the know-all, end-all, but I do have almost 50 years of experience. I think that the vast majority of the CTA will remain constitutional. I think that perhaps some of the penalties. So, for example, the three of us being penalized because somebody didn't comply that was beyond our control. Doesn't seem fair. And I think some of that stuff is going to be unconstitutional. But let me give you an example of something that came about. So remember I said that we've got this bill, also another bill meandering through Congress now, passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate, not yet signed by Joe. So that's the one that extends the changes to 90 days. And extends the time for our prior companies to file for an extra year, basically to December 31st, 2025. But there's another component that was in there that I think was quite draconian, written in grammar that only the governmental people could understand, that basically made an imposition upon the FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, that they cannot even look at or accept an application that does not have the humans behind it. So let's say there are 45 reporting individuals and entities for a particular company, and 43 of them or 44 of them are all reported, and the 45th one is a standout. You know, I'm not giving that, I'm not doing this, or we don't know who that trustee was. We did that trust 15 years ago. People have died, trustees have changed, and guess what? It's held by and a trust for my ex-wife, and we're not talking, haven't talked for years. I can't get her information, and I can't, she's the trustee, and I don't know where she lives, and I can't, sure as hell can't get her driver's license. What they're basically saying is in FinCEN, you cannot look at that. That company cannot be in compliance until you either eliminate or fix that one component. I don't know how that's going to fly, but that's actually an update to the legislation because they're hell-bent on trying to find out who's behind there. We also have an issue of protection of private information. A lot of information is going to be flying around between law offices and governmental websites and addresses and passports and driver's licenses. I think it's a fertile field for people to try to get that confidential information because it's all must be filed electronically. And so you know they're going to have issues. You know you're going to have other issues potentially with breaches in the FinCEN registry. It's all supposed to be only for governmental or law enforcement use. You know, we've all worked with the government long enough, there's going to be a breach and that information may get out. So there's a lot of issues that are associated with this.
Hey, Harry,
sure.
Before you go on, Leon has a question. He says, to clarify, is a revocable trust that doesn't own any reportable entities exempt?
Yes. Trusts under current CTA are non-reporting entities. And trust companies, because they're highly regulated, are non-reporting entities. So Cynthia, you have your living revocable trust. Inside, you put your bank account, your brokerage account, your house, you know, and maybe a piece of property. There's no entities in there that's not a reporting entity.
Okay.
Now, have an LLC that owns that real estate, which you need to do. Otherwise, you've got landlord-tenant liability up the yin-yang. All right. Everyone holds it in an LLC. That LLC is a reporting entity. The trust is an owner of that LLC. So then the trust becomes all the players in the trust become reporting entities as well. So correct. The trust themselves. Now, just to,
Harry, the key too is somebody asked you before. Well, then if my trust is reportable because I've got entities in there,
it's not the trust that's reportable, it's the players in the trust.
The players in the trust is, well, I'll just take my entities out of the trust. But that's not a good idea.
Oh, yeah, you could take your entities out of the trust. So now we don't report who the trustee is and who the settlor is and who the beneficiaries are. Sure, you could do that, but now everything is subject to probate and public scrutiny and the game plan for the kids and mostly, but it makes no sense. Then the other conclusion that a lot of people come to is, well, I'm going to hold that four unit apartment building in just in my living revocable trust and not put it in LLC, because if I put it in LLC, I have to report. So now they have unlimited liability for landlord tenant liability, and if they have a crash their car, they'll lose their apartment. So the whole purpose of for estate planning and asset protection was to put it in a protected entity. They lost that all because they didn't want to report, which was easy enough. It was, you know, Cynthia, this is the number, all right? And it's one and done, all right? So I think that all of those reasons make no sense. But what does make
sense? Fear or distrust of the government.
Oh, absolutely.
Or Department of Treasury, you're saying, even though that, you know, there's a lot of talk about governments losing control of the websites and your information getting out there, or the possibility they may come after you and start now taxing on new entities, that it's still not worth the pain to not report to actually get rid of your trust. Well, in other words, the trust has enough protection.
But you didn't get rid of reporting. You got rid of the trust, but every entity still had a report.
Oh yeah.
You just changed the beneficial owner from the trust, Cynthia's trust, to Cynthia. All right. So Cynthia owns the 1/3 instead of Cynthia's trust owning the 1/3, we're still a reporting entity. The only way you get out of it is not to have a reporting entity. And that says you're not going to use a corporation, you're not going to use a limited partnership, you're not going to use an LLC. Well, that's ludicrous. We must use those for much bigger concerns, that we don't want to get a lawsuit for $10 million and lose everything we've owned, which it should have been in an LLC, and it would have been an $8,000 liability, became a $3 million liability. That's nuts. So I think the reporting is here to stay. Now, you're going to have those people that don't trust the government. I don't trust them. All right. I don't trust them to do anything right. Just think about it when they turn around and say, you got 11 months to file 33 million companies in America. Oh, come on. And FinCEN, I think they have 200 employees, you know, that work for FinCEN. So and they're forcing everyone to do everything electronically. What happened to the people that are not technically savvy? People that don't know how to use the internet or the website, they can't report. They're going to have to hire people to report for them. That's one of the services that we provide, for example. So it becomes this morass of things, but it's new. We've never had anything like this in the United States before. My advice is, as a lawyer to everybody listening, is you need to comply. All right. But the big part is you need to determine how to comply. That's another reason for constitutional question. It shouldn't be difficult to comply. It shouldn't require a lawyer with a very specialized lawyer who understands estates and business transactions to have to analyze every company to see who has to comply. Shouldn't be hard to comply with the law. Should be easy. All right. They make it difficult and now you can't comply or you don't know how to comply. You're mistaken, can't comply. And now you face criminal and civil penalties. That makes no sense. It's nonsense, but it is what it is. And that's what we got. So you have the confidentiality, you have the modifications and changes to all legal agreements. You want to go back and change all the stockholders agreements and operating agreements and limited partnership agreements for pre-existing to add CTA language, and the new ones will come with CTA language that's in it. And then the other thing too is that it's really disturbing to some degree is that a lot of people didn't even know that the CTA Act existed. They didn't know. You know, we've been rolling it out. I've been doing webinar after webinar after webinar. It was written up in the journal, written up in the papers, and there's some TV shows talked about it a little bit. But considering the massive nature of it, the government should have done a much better job of making sure that the populace understands what it takes to comply with a law that's now in effect. That I have a law in effect that went into effect January 1st, and a lot of people say, "What's the CTA?" And they're small business owners. Ugh, how do they find out? By word of mouth, by joining Vistage, you know, getting good information that they need, which is really important. So the law is flawed, but I think it's here to stay. So I think it's a great time now to do any questions and answers that we currently have. So we now know reporting companies, old and new. We know who needs to report, what companies are exempt, and how to use that exemption, and things that have to happen. Complicated.
Yeah, I know an issue that comes up a lot is for Vistage level companies that may be exempt for revenue and headcount. You know, early on, people just dismissed it. Oh, I don't need to report. But then, Harry, as you start giving presentations and say, this is important, everybody here is, you start talking about, well, wait a minute, all these Vistage members that are clients of the law firm, because we have hundreds of them across the country that work with you, you're setting up these brother-sister entities for them that are related to their main companies. Mm-hmm. They got to report. And they don't.
Let's make that clear. So, Cynthia, for your members, if the company itself, the company, LLC, LP, or corporation, is an exempt company, it meets the 20 and 5 million, it's exempt. If it has subsidiaries, subsidiary A, B, C, and D, so they're wholly owned subsidiaries of the exempt entity, no reporting. You with me on that?
Yeah.
But that's not the way it works. People have two or three pieces of real estate, each in a separate LLC. They'll have their stocks, bonds, and cash in an LLC that's owned by an asset protection trust. The ones that have done some sophisticated, proper asset protection estate planning are going to have, like I have, nine mm-hmm. other entities. Although
vehicles for the company, from the company IP,
Those
and sometimes they're totally unrelated to the main company, you know, their business. They may set up totally separate businesses for one of the kids, or grandkids, or they may go buy, you know, a couple million dollars piece of equipment.
Or spouse has, spouse has a little consulting business on the side, or another spouse, you know, on the side formed a company that they used to write off stuff for his hobby because he likes to play around with Ferraris and cars. All of those are the exact target of CTA because they're saying they're coming up, you know, it's like Joe's micro racing company, you know, and Joe's micro racing company could be a front for terrorists and money launderers. Who's Joe? Who owns it? Who are the human beings behind it? That's very important. The other thing too is that you would think that they're gonna—they're already monkeying around with the act in Washington. So now it's 20 and 5 million. Who knows? In a year or two, it'll be 10 and 2.5 million. You know, it's just. And then foreign companies, if the foreign company is registered to do business in America, the foreign company is subject to CTA. Who's the owner of the foreign, the Nevis LLC, the Cook Islands LLC, you know, the BVI, British Virgin Islands LLC, the offshore trust in the Cook Islands, the offshore trust in Belize, all of those entities that all the things that we've done for years and years, now we're reporting them to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. But what you said, at Cynthia, is one of the major, nobody touched the government to do this. What are you going to do with this information? They claim it's not public. They have tons and tons of penalties for misuse of that data, all right, to protect that data. Because if they can't protect that data, they're not going to get compliance under the act. And so they're threatening people to become compliant. They have a duty to protect it. But then it was so funny in my studies. I've spent hours and hours on this act. They'll share this information, for example, with Interpol, with the British government. You know, if the British government says, well, one of the owners of Harry, Paul, and Cynthia Co., Paul is a British subject, and we think that what he's up to is trying to evade UK taxes. They'll have sharing agreements between the government, so it doesn't even stay within the United States. So it's troubling in some respects, but understand its purpose. Its purpose is noble, but again, I'll just repeat. I don't want to be redundant, but I think it's going to put a burden. They'll learn about all of the proper, good, law-abiding companies, and they still won't learn about who the terrorists are and the rest. They'll find a way around CTA. They always do. Sure. It's just like the gun stuff, you know. Take away the guns from people that are okay, then the bad people are going to get guns anyway, or you just can't defend yourself. So it's similar. Questions that we have?
Do we have any more questions out there?
I think we're good. Yeah, I think we got questions early on, and I had a few emailed in to me prior, which I read off to you already. So, I think we're good. I just want to say thank you very much, Harry. That was awesome. Cynthia, thanks for putting this together with Harry. And again, reminding everybody in the chat there, I put my email in there, and we're going to get this recording out to everybody. If you want to get one-on-one with Cynthia, Harry, and talk to us about, you know, all the things we're doing, love to do that.